and welcome to My Career in Data, a podcast where we discuss with industry leaders and experts how they have built their careers. I'm your host, Shannon Kemp, and today we're talking to Peter Bennell from Equifax.
With a robust catalog of courses offered on demand and industry-leading live online sessions throughout the year, the Dataversity Training Center is your launchpad for career success. Browse the complete catalog at training.dataversity.net and use code DVTALKS for 20% off your purchase.
Hello and welcome. My name is Shannon Kemp and I'm the Chief Digital Officer at Dataversity. And this is My Career in Data, a Dataversity Talks podcast dedicated to learning from those who have careers in data management, to understand how they got there and to talk with people who help make those careers a little bit easier. To keep up to date in the latest in data management education, go to dataversity.net/subscribe. Today, we are joined by Peter Bennell, the Global Data Office Leader from Equifax. And normally, this is where a podcast host would read a short bio of the guest, but in this podcast, your bio is what we're here to talk about. Peter, hello and welcome.
Hello, Shannon.
So tell me, I'm so excited to hear your story. You're the Global Data Office Leader at Equifax. So tell me first, you know, what type of business is Equifax?
Absolutely. So Equifax is primarily into what we call a risk management industry. So we provide actually the data that helps our clients access the risk of their consumers. So we operate in different segments: retail, finance, hospitality, health, everywhere. And initially, Equifax is actually a 125-year-old company. So we started off as a credit bureau. So when you talk to most of the people, the first thing that comes to their mind is, okay, you are a credit reporting company. We have come a far way from that because we are now a data and analytics company. So we provide information that helps the consumers improve their financial outcome, whether you're applying for a mortgage loan, a car loan, a student loan, or even finding your job. All the information about you is provided by us that helps our clients do educated decision about the risk they take on, whether they are borrowing you money or bringing you into their workforce.
Oh, fascinating. I actually didn't know the latter part of that in terms of job placement, but it makes sense and absolutely very fascinating. And I love how you describe it as a data and analytics company, because that is very much what you're doing.
Absolutely.
So tell me, as the Global Data Office Leader, what do you do?
Okay, so Equifax is kind of a global company with offices in Australia, New Zealand. In LATAM, we have like 18 countries. In UK, Portugal, Spain, India, Canada, and of course the US. And we have a global enterprise data office that actually is kind of, you can think of it as an internal advisory customer group within Equifax. We have a data and analytics company or a brand, like you'd say a group within each of these regions, and they roll up under the different president of that region. So Australia has got their own data and analytics, so is India, so is Liberia and all the areas. The role of global data analytics group is to actually provide a kind of an advisory role and make sure that everybody is marching in the same direction, having a consistent standard best practice across the company, because it makes us not only efficient, it helps us be much more cost effective, and it helps us make more progress quickly because we can leverage the same thing across the globe.
Makes a lot of sense. And I want to dive into that a little bit, because, you know, so many companies provide, you know, pushback on data management practices without understanding that it can help them save money, like you just mentioned.
Absolutely. So one thing I forgot to mention is like we are primarily a data company. So unlike most of the company, like data is kind of a byproduct of the transaction system. Like for example, Nike or Home Depot, they have data, but data is not what drives them, right? They have their products. Like Nike has their sports goods, apparel, shoes, and all that. That is what drives their revenue. That's what keeps the lights on. For a company like Equifax, it's data. We hear about the term data as an asset, data-driven company, data as a product. So most of companies start with data as an asset, then they try to become data-driven company, and ultimately data as a product. So we are already in the data as a product. So 100% of our revenues is data driven. So you can say if you take data out of the equation, we will not be able to even keep the lights on. So because of that, it's very important for us to like literally our organization structure is unicorn compared to most of the companies because of how data forms an integral role. And to put things into perspective, our Chief Data Analytics Officer, the Global CDAO, is part of the CEO's leadership team. So he reports directly to the CEO. Most of the companies, like if you see the CDO is like few levels down, like hidden under the operation team or the finance team or the technology team. But for us, it's not that the case. So it's a whole different kind of organization structure. And everyone within the company is kind of a data steward in some, or I should say a steward in some shape or form, because they all have to deal with data from different perspective or lens.
Yeah, indeed. I would bet you have some very good best practices to share with other companies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of it other companies may not have to deal with because they don't have to work with the kind of data we do. So we work in a highly regulated, restricted ecosystem. So because of which the data that actually comes to us, we have to be very careful and we have to be excellent guardians and custodians of the data. It's not our data, it is the data of the consumer. Like for example, in US, we have say about 350 plus million unique consumers. So we get data about them. We get from financial institutions, from other payment like utilities, employment, and all that. So when the data comes into company, it's completely locked down. Like, you know, on one hand, you talk about data literacy. For us, like we cannot just open up the data to everyone within the company. Like it has to be really regulated. Why do you need access to data? So one of the best practices, like kind of the data is always locked down. And if somebody needs access to the data, there have to be a business case, a permissible purpose. What are you trying to do with the data? Why you need access? And again, that access is granted for a specific time frame. So it's not that somebody has access to the data, they can go anytime and take a look at it. And that cadence and discipline helps us really have a much better control on the data, A. And B, like for we do have like a data privacy and data compliance group. Unlike other companies, we have a bigger footprint in those areas. One of the key roles is classifying the data because it's extremely important. Like, what is actually PII data? What data should be even stored, encrypted, even if when it is in transit? Like, not all data is important, as you know. So, you try to enforce that on everything, it's going to be extremely expensive. So, identifying what are the data that we have to manage and govern in a very cost-effective and efficient way. We have a very good blueprint and roadmap, and we have to do it. And not just that, when we get audited, we have to actually show exactly what we are doing and how we are doing it. We have to be transparent in our processes. So that keeps us on our toes 24/7 because you never know when you get audited, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Gosh, typically in these podcast interviews, I ask, people how you work with data in your job, but oh my gosh, there's so much data in your job. You are constantly working with it. But tell me, what data do you work with the most to be efficient in what you need to do?
Right. So throughout my career, I've actually worked in different areas of data management. So, like you say, the more bigger a company becomes, they have an expert for each eye. So, like in some of the companies, but when I started initially, like when I was with LexisNexis, I was managing the business intelligence data warehouse group, and my whole focus was just on creating competitive intelligence predictive models for the insurance company. When I went to the next job after that, it was in the automotive aftermarket. And there, my whole focus was on data quality because always when I join a company, I have been thrown into an area where the pain point is higher and they want somebody to focus on that and fix it and get it done. And now, when I'm with Equifax, when I joined Equifax about 5.5, 6 years back, my role was to focus on data catalog metadata. And we had just signed a contract with Collibra. And implementing and executing Collibra globally was a huge initiative, actually, still going on because, as you know, we have so much data. So I'm focusing on the metadata, data catalog, and data governance aspect of it at the moment.
Wow, fascinating. When you've mentioned some of your history, so let's back it up a little bit and talk about how you got to where you are a little bit more. So tell me, like, when you were very, very young, 6 years old, what was the dream that did you dream, like, I'm going to grow up and be a global data office leader at Equifax? Or what was the dream initially?
It's actually interesting and funny because when you're growing up, you are not exposed to a lot of things. So kind of what fascinates you may be the trigger point into this world. So for me, in when I was growing up in those days, I think the only programming language was BASIC. And in school, like a vendor had come and shown like a very simplistic game they are building BASIC, and the kids were allowed to go and like press few keyboards, and I was in awe. Like I said, okay, I want to be a programmer, like I want to write that code. And so that was my goal, like when I was growing up, like I have to get into information technology, writing code. And when I graduated, like there wasn't actually a computer science degree. So I graduated with electronics. I graduated with honors in electronics engineering. On the hardware side, my specialization was microprocessor system design. And I really didn't like it because my true love was software, right? So right from my first job, I started working with software development. And again, I started with applications, like writing software applications and supporting different areas. It was halfway through my career that I actually transitioned into data world. And that was fascinating. And as I was working with the data and all that, halfway through my data career, I got fascinated by data governance because, and it wasn't planned. It was like for me, like I like to work with challenges, and every trajectory that I took was intentional and giving me more challenges because due to lack of governance, I was always having like problems with the data, and I saw that we are trying to catch it too late at the tail end of the process. And I said, something is not right. And that made me take a step back and look at that. Then I saw, hey, there's a huge area of data governance. And this was like 20 years back. I said, you know what? And nobody really cared much about it because it was a nice to have. So I said, you know what? Let me jump into that because I like to fix something at the root cause, then wait and fix it at the end. So halfway through my data career, I morphed into a data governance guy, and then as they say, that's the history.
Visit dataversity.net and expand your knowledge with thousands of articles and blogs written by industry experts, plus free live and on-demand webinars covering the complete data management spectrum. While you're there, subscribe to the weekly newsletter so you'll never miss a beat.
Oh, that is very fascinating. So, okay, so you're in data governance. Is that when you started moving towards the career path that you mentioned?
Right.
So where did you go from there?
So as I started moving into data governance, I started getting exposed to various aspects. And that is where I got exposed to DEMA and CDMP and understanding the DEMA DIMBOK wheel. And it actually opened my mind, because a lot of times when you're working in a company, you also focus on one specific area. You don't see the big picture until you are exposed to some standards from an international body like DEMA and all that. And that helped me really start looking at it more from a holistic point of view. And then I started pivoting towards data strategy too, because, they go kind of hand in hand. You need data governance, but then unless data governance is something that can add value and outcome to what you're doing, it doesn't really mean much, right? So wearing the data strategy hat helped me see, okay, now why are we doing this? So what? Like my boss says, so what? So that helped me actually quantify and provide the value to what you're doing. And unintentionally, as I started doing that, I realized I was getting good at data strategy too, because looking 5 years down the line, why are we doing this? Where do we want to be? And what do we need to do? So you can say I'm wearing actually a data governance and data strategy hat, and I keep on swapping them as needed, but they go hand in hand.
Oh, indeed. So when your boss said, so what was the winning argument? What made you, what was the point that helped your boss to see that it was an important thing?
And that's a very good question. See, it was kind of an aha moment for me, because a lot of times, I'm sure many of us, we focus on the output. Hey, I'm trying to do this. This is what I need to see. But then what is even more important from the output is the outcome. The so what is the outcome. So you may deliver every task that you are supposed to deliver. It's like a checklist. But if you didn't meet the outcome, that project is not really valuable. You completed everything on budget, under time. But if it is not being leveraged or used for the purpose it was supposed to, I actually now consider that initiative a failure. So that changed my perspective on what I do. So everything I do is actually intentional and seeing that the outcome can be achieved, which means sometimes your output may not be on time or under budget, but that's fine. Even if you have to stretch that a little bit, but if it meets the outcome, that's gratifying.
It is indeed. And so you were able to talk about an outcome that your boss was able to get behind and say, oh, yeah, I want that.
Right. And it's not that we never knew what the outcome is. It's just that we didn't really give it enough importance. We said, okay, fine, yeah, that's what it is. But when you start working, I forgot who is the famous person. He said, beginning with the end in mind. So whatever you're doing, I think Jack Collins or somebody, I'm not sure who it was, or Patrick Lencioni, one of them, I'm not sure. But they said, whenever you start something, you need to know what the end is, why you're doing it. And that fits exactly into that philosophy or thought process.
It does indeed. All right. So does that bring you then to where you are today?
Absolutely.
In your career? Yeah.
But I would lie if I say that, hey, I have reached the pinnacle of where I need to be. I've seen it. I've learned everything, I know it all, because in our industry, learning is a continuous process. And I know, like from Dataversity, you guys also are experiencing it. Like things are evolving on a daily basis. So you'll never stop learning, like until you die. And that's why, like, one of my knowledge base is coming to Dataversity website and keeping on reading and at least being aware of it. So I'm always seeking out something that I don't know, and I know it's out there. So it's a learning process, because that helps you grow, because others you will be a dinosaur if you just say, okay, I know this and that's all I'm going to do.
Yeah, so I love that. And thank you for the shout out. So tell me then, what's been your biggest lesson so far in your career?
Yes, yeah, so there's actually a few lessons. Like one I just mentioned is like never stop learning, always be curious, because that is what's going to keep the spark in you. And do not assume that the status quo is perfect. Just because things are working doesn't mean that there is no room for improvement. You can, at the same time, one of my most important rule is never reinvent the wheel. So I sometimes try to be lazy as to like not do it to see if somebody else has already done it, because I don't want to waste time of, if something is out there, I would rather enhance from where it is, unless somebody has built something. Invest my energy and time to take it to the next level, not try to build something again, because just to get the glory and fame of being the originator of it. Like I think that is a total waste. It should not be done. And the other thing is, like, as an individual, of course, I didn't know this as I was actually growing through my career. One of the important thing is to build your own brand, not just within your company, outside the company. So that's why, like, you have to be very much engaged and give back to the community. So right now, like, I'm on three data management, data governance board. Like, I am on board of the Technology Association of Georgia Data Governance Society. We have a DEMA Georgia chapter. I've been the founding president and now the current treasurer. I'm also on the board of DEMA International. I'm the VP of operations. And you have to actually give back, because I've got a lot back from the society, from all the communities. So it's but natural for me to give back, like something in return. And you also learn, like, for example, I think I go into these organizations knowing all, but as I talk to other experts, I learn a lot from them just by talking to them. So those are the lessons I've learned, that never underestimate what you can sometimes learn from just a simple conversation with another peer.
So very true, and I love that attitude. Thank you so much. And you're right, and with that community, you can find those nuggets where you don't have to recreate the wheel and be efficient in your work. That's really, really good
Absolutely.
advice. So tell me, being so involved in data, what is your definition of data?
I was waiting for you to ask me this question. I hope it's not a trick question, but
It's not.
no, I'm just kidding. But it's actually fascinating how the definition of data has evolved the last 25, 30 years. If you remember, it started off like, data is the oil. And they said, okay, the data is the oil, and we can use and all that. And then after some time, actually, it was, I think, Peter Aiken, he said, data is the soil. So from oil, it morphed into a soil. For me, again, I think data is a fuel, because the way I see is we use data subconsciously in our personal and professional life, because we make decisions on a daily basis. And when we apply critical thinking, we need the data. And like even in your personal life, where you are at home, you are talking about something, you want to buy a toy for your kid. the first thing that comes to your mind is trying to look at what all are the ads that you have seen, what are the consumer safety reports that came up about certain toys. So what you're doing is trying to go back to the data to get some data points that help you make a educated decision about what you're going to do. So it's like a fuel for me, because if that is not there, you're just taking a leap of faith. You may hit success, or it can completely backfire. So for me, data is a fuel in your personal and professional life.
Oh, I love it. So then, do you see the importance of data management and the number of jobs working with data increasing or decreasing over the next 10 years, and why?
From my personal experience, one of the challenges with data management has been the lack of standards and consistency and best practices. So every company does it in a different way. And it's actually interesting, because the data industry has been there for a very long time. But when you actually compare it with the other industry, like engineering and medicine and all that, there isn't like established standards. Of course, now we are seeing a lot of standards coming up. So there's a challenge. But what has happened is, with the introduction of AI, and of course, AI has been there since 1950, so it's not something new. But leveraging AI to augment data management is going to completely revolutionize how we are going to do things, because it's not going to completely replace the humans, but a lot of the mundane, repetitive work is going to be taken over by AI in every aspect of data management, right from data quality to data analysis and all that. So those skill sets will not be needed, but you still need a human to understand the business domain, because there is no easy silver bullet that will tell you, okay, you understand the business domain. You will get a lot of help from technology and all that through AI. Like now, if you have to build a complex model, you really don't have to be a sophisticated data scientist. All these major vendors are abstracting out those things and say, you know what, you want to build a predictive model, show me your data and let me do something, and I can bring up a predictive model. But ultimately, as the domain expert, you have to understand what are the use cases, why are we doing, what is the value of something, like where can we really impact a change? And AI cannot help you there. That has to be a domain expert who will have to make that call. It's like the prompt engineering, right? Like you ask stupid questions, it's going to give you stupid answers. But does that mean that your LLM is like useless? No. You didn't ask the right question. So knowing to ask the right questions is a skill by itself that comes from understanding the domain. So going back to your question, data management will still be there. It has to be there. It has to be mature, consistent. But we will see like half of the data management ecosystem being replaced by AI. And actually, Gartner had explained it very well about 5 years back. In fact, not even now. They said AI is like augmented intelligence that will come into data management, from data quality to everything else, and help improve that process and quality. So that's where it is.
Very, very nice. So, what advice then would you give to people looking to get into a career in data management?
So the most important advice I would give is, like, you need to really enjoy working with data. Don't try to jump into this profession just because of the glorious salaries and all those things, because you will get frustrated very fast. So you need to have a passion for working with data. You need to enjoy what you're doing. And don't chase all the technologies out there, because AI is going to replace a lot of it. It's going to abstract out. Like, you know, about 5, 7 years back, there was a chase, like graduates were chasing all the technology, trying to learn all those things and all that. we should call them like keyboard data scientists, because they could quickly go and use a platform, use a language, and churn things out. That is going to be irrelevant. What's going to be important is your ability to quickly understand a business domain, understand all those things, because that cannot be replaced. So if somebody wants to pursue a career, start with enjoying working with data, because if you don't do that, I would recommend don't even get into this field, because you're going to get frustrated and you will not make much, you'll not go too far. And again, don't chase any of those technology platforms and all that. I mean, chase some of it, but not all of it, because what is going to get you hired is not your expertise on using certain language and certain platform. It's like, how can you quickly adapt to change? And how can you leverage technology to really move forward, like as such?
It's very good advice. Yeah, and you're so right. The passion is so important, because it's the common thread amongst all data practitioners, that passion and that curiosity. So if you don't have it, you'll stick out.
And I forgot, and I'm glad you mentioned that curiosity is very important, because if you're not curious, you're not asking the right questions, and you will be missing out something really big, and you are just doing something routine. And data is not kind of the data ecosystem. Of course, some part is operational, but those things will be automated. So if you come into the data world and think that, okay, I'm going to have an operational mindset and rinse, repeat, that's not what it is. You will not be successful or be there for long, because you'll be replaced by an AI chatbot for that purpose. So the curiosity is what keeps you like on the edge, and that cannot be replaced by anything else.
Yes, indeed. Oh, well, Peter, it has been such a pleasure to chat with you today.
My pleasure too, Shannon. It was great talking to you on the DataVarsity podcast.
Well, thank you. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, if people wanted to learn more about Equifax, where would they go?
Yeah, like again, people have heard about Equifax. It's just that they have very different version of what Equifax does, and we are much more than what it is. We are way more than just a credit company. So
Yeah, so it's just Equifax.com, yeah.
Equifax.com. They can go to a website and they can look at the different verticals that we support and the different markets that each of the verticals support. So it's like a complex matrix of how we help the financial outcome of an individual across the globe. So it's actually there's an infomercial, a one page that shows us in how the numbers by people by different demographics and products has changed their life.
Cool. And you also mentioned Dema International and your local chapters. And so if people wanted to find out more about those, where would they go?
Absolutely. So the best way to go is DEMA International website, DEMA.org. And on DEMA.org, there is an option called chapters. And there, DEMA International has chapters in about 50 to 80 countries across the globe. And of course, there's 20 more new countries forming DEMA chapters. So depending on which part of the globe you are in, I am sure there's a chapter close to where you are, and sometimes it may be just around the corner for all you know. So I would highly encourage people to go to the DEMAI website, go to DataVarsity website, because there's a tremendous amount of information out there, and it's just going to keep on growing and evolving as we move forward. So it is a living, breathing knowledge base. So go there and don't stop learning.
But I love it. Thank you so much. Again, Peter, it has been such a pleasure to chat with you today, and I'm so grateful you came onto the podcast.
You're welcome, Shannon.
And to all of our listeners out there, if you'd like to keep up to date in the latest in podcasts and in the latest in data management education, you may go to dataversity.net/subscribe. Until next time, stay curious, everyone. Thank you for listening to Dataversity Talks, a podcast brought to you by Dataversity. Subscribe to our newsletter for podcast updates and information about our free educational webinars at dataversity.net/subscribe.